This podcast is certified fresh. Freshmediaworks.com.
Hello and welcome to Mikey Pot of the Bayou, and my phone just started ringing. It can wait. Today is August 29th. I'm leaving in like 3 days. Wow. I'm really super sad about that today. And I wasn't going to record, but it's one of those like, well, this is podcasting and this is like... Part of what I wanted to do by going away was to be sort of document everything that happened leading up to it and, like, you know, the experience at the commune in Koinonia. And, well, today what is going on is that I'm extremely depressed. So, wow. Man. Okay, I had a going away party last night and it was all fine and dandy. It sucks. Oh, God. And then it really hit me when I got home. Chris Daly, as you all probably know from Riding with a Window Down, and Tony, they gave me a ride home from Brazil where the party was, and it was just one of those like, oh, wow, never going to see you again. Well, I mean, never is a little dramatic, I guess, but you know, it won't be easy to see you again. So that's going to happen with a lot of people that I know. And I'm going to be a big pussy about it. So anyway, that's how I'm feeling today. But I'm really so excited about going, and you know, I know I'm supposed to be doing this. So whatever. how's this for like real life podcasting for you? So anyway, I had fun last night and it was great. Woo-hoo. So how do I make a transition now into this interview that I did a couple days ago? And it's with Ray Hill, who is someone that I really value in Houston. He is a... this is just cracking me up at the same time that I feel like totally losing it. He's a activist in Houston who I've known for a long time. And he also does a show called The Prison Show, which is really cool, dude. It's like... you'll hear about it in the interview. I don't want to talk anymore because I'm about to lose it. You know what? I'll play something happy and funny. This is Chris Cox. I discovered him on YouTube the other day. This song is called Curious GWB. I usually hate political music, you know, because it usually sucks and it's usually really just lame. But this song is hilarious. It's a it's like a rap deal. It's like a rap deal. And you can find the video, which is even funnier, at his website, buttertv.com, BUTTERTV.com. My cat's in my lap right now, and she's standing up when she should be laying down and being cute. There she goes. So, welcome to my show. This is episode 64. Today is August 29th. Mikey Pot on the Bayou. Here's Chris Cox with Curious GWB.
What's up, America? It's me, G to the WB, your president, number 4-3, land of the brave and sort of kind of free, trying to keep it real up here in D.C. You feel that? That's a groove. Make you move. People wonder sometimes what I be thinking. My approval ratings are low and they just keep on sinking. It's enough to drive a drinking man back to drinking. So I grab a 40 and go sit by my man Lincoln. Now Saddam Hussein, he was a gangster. More tricks up his sleeve than the prankiest prankster. And he was a bad man, he had WMD. And you don't mess around with the GWB. Now everyone's saying we're in a quagmire, saying I was wrong and calling me a liar. But I don't care, I don't need nobody. Iraq ain't my fault, the intelligence was cruddy. But go on, criticalizers, go on and judge. I got my spin doctors, MCs Limbaugh and Drudge. So deal with it, country, you all voted for us. Now check out my Republican base while I take it to the chorus. I'm a serious George. Some say a delirious George. Make me angry, I'm a furious George. But mostly I'm a curious George. A little different in the brain. But I'm sane. Know what I'm saying? That's like a double entendre. Hurricane Katrina was a natural disaster. Some critics say I should have acted faster. But let me ask you this, why ain't them people have boats? Or at least some floaty things so they could all float? People say I was in Crawford hiding in my cove. But that's just not true. Ask Carl Rove. I was monitoring the storm from right there on the ranch while simultaneously clearing out a dangerous branch. Yeah, there you go. Now who's to blame? Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, that's a shame on, you know, I won't get fooled again. You know what I mean. Now everyone's talking about the ports in Dubai. Meanwhile, Cheney's shooting guys damn near in the eye. It's enough to make a crying man cry. But I just keep on keeping on, cause I'm a tough guy. What I got is a tricky situation. Gotta keep selling a war that's bankrupting the nation. Every now and then I feel a little bad. So I just pick up the phone and I call my dad. He says, son, don't worry, you're doing just fine. I mean, you got Rummy and Cheney and Condi Rice. You got the House, the Senate, now you got the Supremes. You're batting 1,000, you're the king. Well, you're right, daddy, I'm in the right wing. That's right, boy, and it's the right thing. Well, they say I'm not smart, What? You went to Yale. Show them your class ring. Then can I throw them in jail? Well, now, hold on. There are certain laws. Yeah, but daddy is for a righteous cause. Well, geez, Louise Jr., do what you think. I gotta go. Me and Clinton are hitting the links. Well, you're hanging out with Billy again? Now, Junior, I told you, he's just a friend. Okay, Daddy, but you don't think I'm a flunky? Nah, you're just curious, George, like the monkey. I'm a serious George. Some say a delirious George. Make me angry, I'm a furious George. But mostly, I'm a curious George. A little different in the brain. Peace out, America. I gotta get back to the white heezy. Sayonara, vaya con Dios, hasta la adios. Keep it real in 06, picking up sticks. Word.
Okay, joining me today on the show is Ray Hill, who is an activist from way back in the day in Houston, and also the host of The Prison Show on KPFT Friday nights from 9 to 11. Thanks for joining me, Ray.
Thank you for inviting me.
I think that you may not even remember, because I used to be really active in Queer Nation back in probably like the really early 90s, late 80s.
A very important organization to my history was Queer Nation.
I remember my friends and I were always like, oh, it's Ray Hill. It was like you were this legendary activist even then. So I guess I don't even know where to start. There's so much to share about the kind of things that you do. What do you, you want to give maybe a little history of how you got involved in activism?
Well, I am a native-born Houstonian. I am now 56 years old, and I will be 57 in October. And I grew up to be the mean old man my mother intended for me to be. My parents were both labor organizers. Frankie, my mother, tried to organize nurses for the Teamsters Union, and she was very proud of that work, although since Texas is a right-to-work or right-to-get-fired state, she didn't have a lot of success. It wasn't successful work, but she spent most of her life trying to do that. Very proud, even though she didn't succeed at most of her objectives. My father organized with a little more success shipyard workers for the AFL-CIO. So I learned things like Sol Alinsky and John L. Lewis and Samuel Gompers and the history of the labor movement at the breakfast table. I remember my first academic assignment from my parents was to come home from school as quickly as I could and watch the McCarthy hearings, the Army McCarthy hearings, on a round black and white television screen so I could report at the dinner table what happened that day, since both of my parents had to miss the hearings because they had to work.
Whoa, what a great way to learn that.
And here I was, 13, 14 years old. I was making a living as a teenage evangelist, which did not impress my parents because they were both a skeptic atheist.
Interesting.
When the money started rolling in, that was pretty good money. I mean, when I was like 15 and 16, I was making $70,000 a year as a teenage evangelist. And $70,000 a year in 1955, 56, and 57 money was an enormous amount of money. My father was making about $10,000 a year as a union shipyard worker, which was considered very good money for a father in a family of five.
Wow. So how did you get involved in the evangelism?
Well, I've just written a play about that called The Miracle of My Unbelief, because I worked in that line of work until I was 17 years old. And then because of a series of experiences that happened in Colmenal, Texas. I rejected all of that and decided that evangelism was not honest work, and so I gave that up. And the play is about my parallel sexual and spiritual development from about age 10 or 11 through age 17, and those things were in obvious conflict. I was gay and sexually active and kind of precocious years, and I was also a kind of bright, precocious kid that memorized the New Testament at age 13 and became a youth evangelist in very, very fundamentalist Baptist churches. And so in my play, the audience is sitting there saying, aha, we know what happens here. He gets busted, and the conflict in this drama will be resolved. And that's not what happens at all. I don't get busted. If I do, nobody says anything because I'm very successful as an evangelist and I'm good for church business. And so they just kind of look, wink and nod and look the other way. Although I have to say that those East Texas farm boys, those years gave pretty good crops, and I was I was harvesting the sheaves with some success in my hotel rooms at night and bringing in the sheaves at the congregation the next night and morning. And so that was kind of interesting work. And then I had a revival one night, and a Pentecostal thing happened under my Baptist sermon. And I said, wait a minute, this is not what I believe. And so then that shook my theology up. And then over the next week, the people that were healed — Baptists don't believe in faith healers. We never met a faith healer in their life that didn't have false teeth and wear glasses. What's up with that?
That's an interesting question.
And go bald. Today they all have these severe comb-overs. And if you could really heal all these maladies, physician, heal thyself. And so I gave that line of work up and took up something a little more honest. I became a burglar.
Yeah, I guess that would be a little more honest, wouldn't it?
Well, it's certainly a lot more interesting. I mean, there's a lot more adrenaline in the burglary business than there is in the preaching business.
Right. So that's what got you in prison, too, right?
Yeah.
It was burglary?
Yeah, some many, many years later, I was sentenced. That all happened in the 50s.
Okay.
My retirement was in 1957. And then in 1970, I took full retirement from the burglary industry, and that meant you go to prison. I was sentenced to 160 years. In Texas prison, and it took no less of a miracle to wire around that. But by this time, I'm used to miracles. So
yeah, all of those years that you were burgling, is that the right word? So you were successful, really. I mean,
you didn't get caught
for quite some time.
I stole things that queers know something about: antiques, art, jewels, and electronics.
And then you just went, turned around and sold it to...
No. Everybody else in the stealing business, in the first place, prison is full of people who haven't stolen $200 in their lifetime and actually got away with it. And what saved me in prison was those headlines: a $4 million burglary ring busted, leader refuses to identify co-conspirators, leader is leader of the homosexual movement in Houston. And I was so embarrassed because my friends were reading that. By the time I got to prison, I discovered that those same headlines made me a hero in that society.
In the prison society?
Yeah, because, I mean, $4 million? I mean, prison's full of people that hadn't stolen $200 and actually got away with it. And here comes a $4 million guy.
Wow. So am I understanding correctly that you were really like the head of a whole burglary ring?
Oh yeah.
That's is that weird that I'm like, man, that's impressive. Good going, dude.
Well, it says more about you than it does about me.
Yeah, I think it does.
I don't criticize that because that's something of the revolutionary spirit that. I hope future generations of gay people have learned from me.
Yeah. So what about the being gay in prison? Nothing to it.
I mean, being gay in prison, all of the fantasies people have, that's not true.
Damn.
Yeah. Sorry to disappoint. In the first place, you get there and you realize you're in a society where there is zero trust. I mean, it didn't take you long to figure out that all of these people are in here because they're the bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
And there is zero privacy.
Right.
Didn't take you long to figure out whatsoever I do, everybody will know it.
Right.
And you say, well, you know, we're going to draw a line here, and all the convicts get on this side, and you've got your society and your sneak writs and all of that. And then on the other side of the line are all those people who wear gray. And they've got their society, and they've got different sneak writs, and no, that's true. That's just not true.
I mean,
there's only one society in prison.
And that's the prisoners. And
everybody's society.
Yeah.
And they have one value system. And so I got into prison, and then I come to the realization that I really couldn't screw there.
Right.
Because of the no trust and no privacy thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, I had lots of offers, but I developed one-liners. You know, gay people are very good at one-liners. I mean, some of us have survived on our wit alone. For lack of intelligence, we substitute that with a sharp tongue and a quick wit. And so what I tell them is, look, I didn't come down here to get married. I'm going to marry somebody with, like, a portfolio and some plans. I'm not going to marry one of you losers. And I don't play that crap.
Right.
And I didn't. I went 4 years and 4 months and 17 days, which is a remarkably short period of time to have discharged a 160-year sentence.
Yeah, that's quite a difference there.
Well, I became a jailhouse lawyer, and I worked my way out of prison with a pencil.
So what does that mean, jailhouse lawyer? I saw that phrase on your website.
Well, a jailhouse lawyer is an inmate who studies the law
okay. And
works on his case by figuring out issues to take up on appeal. And I didn't have to do that by myself, although I did all of the planning and the strategy. I had money. You know, the whole shtick, this $4 million stuff, if I'd run out of money, that would have been exposed as a fraud. But I had a lot of money. One of the things is I got busted when they were investigating my income tax. And when they got through doing that, the warden called me to his office and said, Mr. Hill, I've got a check here from the IRS for $89,000 that you have overpaid your taxes over the last 6 years.
Huh.
Do you want me to put that in your commissary account? I said, oh, no, because you get the interest on my commissary account. I've got several other bank accounts that are drawing interest that I get, and we'll put it in one of those accounts.
Wow.
And so I never ran out of money, and therefore my $4.5 million burglary ring, basically fraud, was perpetuated. But I didn't fence stuff off at 10 cents on the dollar. I opened up an antique shop in Madison County, Tennessee, and sold antiques for top dollar. I didn't pay anything to secure my inventory, but I sold it for what they were worth. You can make a lot of money that way if you get stuff for free and you sell it at what it's worth.
That's interesting.
If you're going to go into the jewel business, the top of that line is jewelry.
Mm-hmm.
The jewel thief is the the guy with the tuxedo in the burglary business. And so I emptied Sackowitz Post Oak Jewel Department one night. I mean, emptied it. They came in the next morning and thought they had moved. They just didn't remember where.
Well, it's just so, like, never having had that experience, there are just so many questions I have, like, well, what'd you do? How'd you get, you know, through the burglar alarm or whatever they had going on? It's just experience.
Well, that was my specialty was burglar alarms. Because it was the beginning. This is the 60s, remember.
Mm-hmm.
I went to prison in 1970, so I did my work in the 60s. And so my job among my team of burglars was to go in and disarm the burglar alarm system. And then I would leave. They would do all the work. I'm not going to lift those heavy antiques. I'm not going to mess up my hands. Are you crazy?
That's beautiful. So all of this experience, I'm assuming, sort of led you to what you're doing now with the prison show on KPFT. Was it that sort of that experience being in prison that sort of?
I was going to be an activist for some time, but once you go to prison, there was this interesting fellow in prison reform. His name was Carl Menninger, and I met old Dr. Carl before he died. And I said, Dr. Carl, I mean, your family owns mental health hospitals. You're very successful in that business. I said, and you have spent most of your life in prison. And he said, do you read much Uncle Remus? And I said, well, you know, when I was a kid, it wasn't as politically incorrect as it is now. Of course, I read it all. And he said, do you remember when Briar Rabbit encountered the tar baby? And I said, yeah. And he said, well, prisons are a tar baby. If you ever get attached to them, there's no way out.
Huh.
And I found Dr. Carl's words to be clairvoyant. Once you've been to prison and you have seen what it is really like to experience and witness an inhumane system of violence and personal destruction, you can't just walk away from that.
Hmm.
Suddenly the labor movement looks, you know, so somebody's not getting paid for their overtime, big deal. What about this guy over here with the oppressive boot of criminal justice on his neck, and he may even be innocent, but he is victim or she is victim. What do you do about that? So you can't really walk away from that part of the picket line if you know what's going on there.
Yeah. That I think it's so easy for us, too, to... Well, I get... Maybe I should say that part of what you're... show, the prison show, has sort of changed in me is that it's impossible for me now just to think, oh, they're in jail, so they must be prisoners, and whatever happens to them is what they deserve. Well, that's not true. And they're like human beings. That, I mean, it's real easy for people to detach from that.
And even though some of them may not be the brightest porch light, even though some of them may not be the brightest porch light on the block,
mm-hmm.
They are human beings, and they have people that care for them, and those are human beings. And if you walk away from that, you have to be even more selfish and cruel than the evangelist guy.
Hmm.
And you also have to be more selfish and cruel than the burglary guy. And if you're just aware of that going on, like you know, the prison show has been instrumental in getting three totally innocent people off of death row. Of course, that's three in 26 years. It's not this overwhelming record, but remember, we're not lawyers.
Yeah.
We're not even paid. We're a bunch of volunteers who come down to KPFT and do a radio show.
And that is where I will leave you for now. I'm going to come back and play the rest of that interview tomorrow. It's been a long time since I started this podcast. This morning I was weeping and all sad, and now I went through all the stages of human emotion. I was angry with my Apple computer, but then I talked to some dimwit at AppleCare, and it made me so angry I called and started spouting off about how I wanted to get rid of this computer and I wanted to switch back to PC, and they are much more responsive. I was very nice about it, but I was like, you know what? I just don't want to do this. And then they put me on the phone with someone who could fix this really minor issue I was having with GarageBand. So, A, I overreacted. B, I talked to a dumbass on the AppleCare, who one of the people told me was probably new, because the lady I talked to was one of those that makes me like, oh, thank God you're listening. And she looked at all my issues I'd had with it and et cetera, et cetera. So then I got transferred to a GarageBand person, and it was excellent. So I think I'm needing to learn how to work with the Apple people. What the issue I was just having was really kind of small, but it was just that it was on top of everything else that I was like, no, I can't figure this out. So anyway, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Ray Hill. And here's someone we haven't heard from in a while.
Action!
Good morning to you, everybody. It's time for a Mikey Pod exclusive.
Mikey Pod exclusive.
A new 100-word story from Lawrence Simon.
Lawrence Simon.
From isfullofcrap.com. Isfullofcrap.com.
Hello, Mikey. I'm accepting your challenge, which really was kind of me sticking my foot in my mouth about AIDS microwave. It just had a ring to it. Now I've got to find the bell to ring to make that ring. That makes sense. Here, let's give it a try. There's two symptoms of AIDS folks forget: fear and ignorance. Early on, sadly, there was plenty of both. There were people dying young and leaving behind loved ones, pets, material possessions, and crap. People would ask at garage sales, picking through tennis rackets and microwaves, did he die of that disease? When told yes, prices would come down or nobody would touch them at all. Take this microwave, for instance. Perfectly good, top of the line. Once they know about its former owner, people think they'll get AIDS from it. It's perfectly safe. Well, okay, maybe an electric shock. It's not well grounded. Well, that's the story. How did I do? Anyone who's listening here, if you can do better on the subject of AIDS microwave, hey, drop Mikey a line or drop me a line. I can be found at podcasting.isfullofcrap.com. Anyway, thanks, Mikey, for all you've done on the bayou, and looking forward to your further adventures in Georgia and New York. And you know what? I bet you're going to be the first person to have a theater play production on the moon.
I missed that on the moon part. How about that little bit of silence after that? Thanks, Lawrence. I'll miss you. No, actually, I'm out of the crying mode. That was earlier today. Thanks for doing that. Those of you who don't know what the whole AIDS microwave was inspired by, go back and listen to the interview with my mom. We refer to it there. Also, I have... here I am. That didn't work out so well, and I'm not going to freak out. That'll be in tomorrow's show. I'll put up another show tomorrow with the rest of the Ray Hill conversation. And then I'm also doing an interview with Kathy Kidd from the Department of Peace. So that'll be out, I guess, on Thursday. And that'll probably be the last you hear from me for a while, unless I wind up podcasting from the trip. I'll tell you more about that. And yeah, so I'm going to end with this song from The Rewinds, or The Rewinds. What would it be? The Rewinds? I think so. I got an email from them with the song Ghostwriters attached. They're going to be featured in Paste Magazine, which is one of my favorite magazines. And if not my favorite, it is my favorite music magazine. It comes with a CD each month. Check it out. And I think that's all I've got for you today. Email me at MikeyPod@gmail.com. The website is MikeyPod.com. And you can also send a voicemail, which I would love to receive, 206-339-6682. I am declaring email response bankruptcy. I think there are some emails that I have lost in the shuffle and that I haven't responded to. If you're one of those people, will you please accept my apology and send it to me again? I complain about this with other people so much that I think I did not even realize that I do it myself. So there are some people out there, if you don't hate me and you're still listening, who I've never responded to some emails from. So if you'll please just accept my apology and send them to me again, I'll try to be better. Maybe I'll come up with some sort of Gmail system or something. Anyway, here's Ghost Writers by the Rewinds. I hope you enjoyed, and I'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
You've been listening to Mikey Pod on the Bayou with Michael Herron. Mikey wants your input to the show. Do you have a comment about something that was said on the show? A review or a promotion of a cultural event, especially in the Houston area? Or you just want to say hi? Email is MikeyPod@gmail.com. The Mikey Pod Show hotline, 206-339-6682. And record it down for all to hear. See you next time right here for Mikey Pod on the Bayou. MikeyPod.com.